This episode brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Do you ever find yourself playing the budgeting game? Shifting a little money here, a little there, and hoping it all works out? Well, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive, you can get a better budgeter and potentially lower your insurance bill too. You tell Progressive what you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll help find you options within your budget. Try it today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law. Not available in all states.
This episode is brought to you by Polestar. There's only one true way to experience the all-electric luxury SUV Polestar 3, and that's to take a test drive. It can go from 0 to 60 in as little as 4.8 seconds with the dynamic handling of a sports car. But to truly understand how it commands the road, you need to be behind the wheel. Up to 350 miles of range, the 3D surround sound system by Bowers & Wilkins, it's all something you have to experience to believe. So book your test drive for Polestar 3 today at Polestar.com.
This is the Rich Eisen Show.
Goats have home lives too.
Live from the Rich Eisen Show studio in Los Angeles.
Rich Eisen.
Hello, Rich Eisen.
Rich Eisen. Oh, that's Susie Eisen's husband.
The Rich Eisen Show. And now, sitting in for Rich, here's Dan Schwartzman.
That is correct. I am in for Rich here on a, what is today, a Friday, July 11th. Beautiful day all around the country, I hope. So much to get into, but I'll tell you what, it's that time of year. Baseball season nearing the All-Star break coming up in a couple of days. The ever-popular Home Run Derby is going to be upon us as well. Yes, I said that tongue-in-cheek. Wimbledon, we are in the women's final. We're setting the men's final up too. We'll give you an update on that. Lot to get into. Cooper Flagg making his NBA debut in the Summer League yesterday. Some called it uneven. I call it who the heck cares. Dan Schwartzman in for Rich Eisen. We have a lot to get into. And before we get into the meat and potatoes here, I do have to admit something. I liked tennis growing up. I watched tennis growing up. I was what you would call a fan of tennis growing up. And then the sport kind of lost me. I remember when I was a kid, I went to Madison Square Garden, the world's most famous arena, as it likes to be called. And I watched, I think it was called the Nabisco Masters back then. And I saw Boris Becker, Ivan Lendl, Stefan Edberg. I mean, really the greats. You know, the generation before we got to the big three and Andy Murray. I'm not going to say the big four because no offense to Murray. He does not belong in the same sentence as Djokovic and Nadal and Federer. He was pretty good. And injury kind of robbed him a bit, but I'm not going to group him in with the three greatest. And then tennis kind of lost me for a while, and I didn't really pay attention. And lately, I've been kind of putting one foot in, a toe in here, started to watch a bit, got into the French Open a bit. Wimbledon's been kind of fun, I have to admit. It's fun when Americans get far, and I think that's what it really comes down to. It's fun when the Americans are in it, and the American men have been so bad for so long that now to have like Taylor Fritz, who was ousted today by Carlos Alcaraz, and Ben Shelton, who was ousted a couple, was that yesterday or the day before, to get to the quarters, the semis, whatever it might be, at least it keeps you interested a lot longer than it used to, because the state of American men's tennis was horrendous from when Andy Murray won, Andy Roddick won, was that the U.S. Open, whatever the heck it was. Seems like 20 years ago. It may have been 20 years ago, by the way. And from that point on, no American man has won anything. And now you have guys like Shelton, you have Fritz, you have Tiafoe, you have Nakashima, I believe it is. I mean, you have American men who are actually pretty good. I'm not talking to John Isners and guys like that, the Marty Fishes of the world. I'm talking about guys who legitimately have a shot to potentially win a Grand Slam event. And I think because of that, it has re-piqued my interest in the sport a bit to where I have to admit, all right, call me a loser if you want, I got into this Wimbledon a little bit today, and I was disappointed to see Taylor Fritz lose today in four sets, and a very competitive four sets to Carlos Alcaraz, who is the 22-year-old stud. So I have to tell you, though, I actually don't mind Alcaraz. I do think he's kind of a sore loser. I think he's a little too emotional on the court. I think that's, you know, I chalk it up to age, really, because he's 22. I get it. When I was 22 and younger, I was kind of a jerk when I played sports. No one likes to lose, right? And when you lose a bit here and there, you kind of act a little maybe inappropriately. You might say something. Your body language may not be the best. I think Alcaraz is guilty of doing that here and there. And in the women's game, you see it with the number one seed who went out to the American. I'm talking about Sabalenka, right? Arina Sabalenka from Belarus. She lost to Amanda Anisimova, the American, yesterday, who goes on to her first Grand Slam final. And there was an incident on the court where Sabalenka had said, like, are you going to apologize? Because apparently Anisimova hit a shot that hit the top of the net, went over, and some people apologize for that in tennis, which I found to be ridiculous. What are you apologizing for? So should a baseball player who hits a ball and hits off the top of the wall for a home run apologize because it barely scraped over? No, who cares? A point is a point. A run is a run. You reach over a goal line and you get the nose right there. It's still a touchdown. In the box score, it's the same thing. Who cares how much of the ball crossed over? Who cares? Ball hits the net, goes over. It's still a point in tennis. There's no asterisk next to it. And then Sabalenka is the same one who lost at the French Open to Coco Gauff. And instead of just saying Gauff played great, she said, well, Gauff didn't beat me. I beat myself, because she had 70 unforced errors. And sure, she played terribly, but still, give credit to where it's due. Gauff won. Sabalenka apologized for it. Her and Gauff were cool. They posted, I think, a social media video together, kind of joking about it. So at least that's fine. But, you do see guys and gals who have, I think, poor sportsmanship. And I get in today, and I'm chatting with our esteemed producer across the glass, Art Martinez. And the first thing he says is, I hate Alcaraz. I hate the guy. Again, I have no problem with Carlos Alcaraz. I really don't. I mean, I think he's a heck of a player. But, Art, what is your deal? Like, you're, like, steamed up today about Carlos Alcaraz because he beat an American. We're going to figure out what the deal is here. I'm going to give you a chance to kind of collect your thoughts and say this appropriately on the air. Okay, so when you collect your thoughts and you can say it appropriately, I'll let you say it. But I really have no problem with the guy. I admire a guy, especially, you got to remember, like, in women's tennis, players mature much quicker. You could have a teenager win a tournament, right? You can have a 19-year-old, an 18-year-old win a Grand Slam event. And it's like, wow, they're young, but still, it's not unheard of. In men's tennis, it takes a bit longer to mature into a star. You very rarely have a teenage man win a Grand Slam tennis event or any tennis tournament. And Alcaraz, of course, has been winning since he's a teenager. He's 22 years old. He's got 5 Grand Slams. He's following in the footsteps of his fellow countryman, Nadal, although he's kind of won a plethora of tournaments. Nadal was obviously the greatest French Open tennis player ever, probably the greatest clay player ever. I wouldn't even say probably. He is the greatest clay player ever. But that really is what it comes down to. So we'll get to that a bit later on. I wanted to throw that out because it's obviously ongoing right now. And right now it's going to be Sinner versus Djokovic. Another great semi, by the way, to have the number one rank versus Djokovic, one of the all-time greatest. All right, I want to switch gears because we witnessed yesterday Cooper Flagg's first NBA game. And it was a summer league game, so, let's be honest, it's not exactly a true telling of his abilities. And people are calling it an uneven performance. He has described it as one of the worst games of his life. And yeah, it wasn't a great effort. He was, 6 of 21, I believe, on the, on his shot selection. So it wasn't like he was, throwing up great shots here. And once again, it is a summer league game. So take it with a grain of salt. Bronny James played a bunch. So right there, it tells you something. Okay. But, Cooper Flagg is going to have games where he's not great. I understand that there is an expectation that comes with being the number one pick. There's an expectation that comes with the hype of being a player that everybody looks at and says, you know, this guy is going to be the next superstar. I've been reading the articles about him, and what people are saying about Cooper Flagg is they expect him to be a superstar. And I don't think that's a real fair assessment for a, what is he, an 18-year-old kid that's in his, you know, first NBA season coming up. He shot 5 of 21 from the field, 0 for 5 from three-point land, did get 6 rebounds, 4 assists, and 3 steals in 32 minutes. But I got to tell you, I watched him play at Duke. There was a ton of, you know, there was a ton of expectations on him at Duke. He was the number one recruit in the nation. He had reclassified to go a year earlier. People forget he's got a twin brother who's actually going to be a freshman college basketball player at the University of Maine this year, the same year his twin brother is going to be an NBA rookie as the number one pick. And he goes to Duke. He dominates at Duke. I mean, dominated. Was a player of the year. Lived up to the hype. So I don't think it's going to be a transition that's going to be very difficult for Cooper Flagg. It's great to see him playing these summer league games, get the experience, be in a position where he kind of gets these jitters out of the way before the regular season gets off. And there's plenty of time, by the way, before the regular season tips off. But I think for people to have these expectations this early for Cooper Flagg, to call it an uneven performance or even call it anything, frankly, is utterly ridiculous. I understand the microscope is on the kid. I get it. But what expectation did you have? I had none. Let the kid go out there, let him kind of, you know, test the waters of the NBA, and then let him go dominate. But I saw that incredible statistic. I guess it's a financial statistic. Last week, I believe it was. Because, you know, NBA salaries are now absolutely through the roof. Like, NBA salaries are at the point of being ridiculous. I forgot who just signed an extension. Maybe it's Devin Booker, where he's going to make $72 million a year in this contract extension. $72 million a year. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is going to make $71.5 million in his extension. These Supermax contracts these guys are entitled to sign because it's a set percentage of the salary cap, which is obviously set by revenue, and the NBA's got unbelievable TV deals, although their ratings aren't very good, yet somehow they have these incredible TV deals. And these guys, because there's so few players on a team, they're absolutely making a fortune. And good for them. I don't begrudge a player going out there and earning as much money as possible. Go ahead. It's mind-boggling numbers, by the way, but still, it's, you know, you're talking about Booker's going to be earning about almost $1 million a game. And probably more. No one plays 82 games anymore, right? He's probably going to play about 72 games this year, meaning he's going to get about $1 million for his 48 minutes of action. And in those 48 minutes, he probably plays 32 or 36 minutes. If you can get it, go do it. I don't begrudge it. But I read that if Cooper Flagg turns out to be the player that he is envisioned to become, which means he will be an all-NBA player. He will make all-NBA teams. He'll be a perennial all-star. He'll be one of the best players in the league. I read that if he signs all these Supermax deals that he can sign along the way, when he's 31 years old, he would have earned, not total, this is just salary, okay? He would earn $931 million. So it's like 13 years, right? Because he will be in the league 13 years because he's 18. He doesn't turn 19 years old till the end of December. That's how young Cooper Flagg is. He literally turns 19 December 21st. So he'll be in his 12th, 13th year, signing all the Supermax deals along the way. Cooper Flagg is going to earn $931 million. And here's where it gets even funnier. Okay, he's not going to retire at 31, so he's going to continue playing, and who knows what TV contracts are at that point. Cooper Flagg will earn literally in salaries, if he's as good as he's, you know, we believe he's going to be, he will earn more than $1 billion just in NBA salary. Over $1 billion. Now, you throw in the endorsement deals, And I believe Cooper Flagg will probably get a bunch of endorsement deals. Why not? He's going to make multiple $1 billion when it's all said and done. Again, the caveat is he's got to live up to being the player that he is expected to become. The money is outrageous. You know, it's always a fun conversation when you sit around with your friends and you're like, well, you know, if I could have my kid playing any sport, what would it be? And I like when people are like, well, I think golf would be great. Yeah, golfers make a ton of money. If you're like Tiger Woods or Phil Mickelson, whatever, they can make a ton of money. Tennis, make a lot of money too. Individualized sport. I'm like, soccer is pretty cool, right? You travel to some of the most beautiful cities in the world. You do the winters in like Dubai and stuff and train there. I mean, I'm sure it's a lot of fun. You know, soccer players have a really good time and they're highly paid. But I think basketball is the way to go. 82 games. Every game is in a climate-controlled environment, right? Think about that. Every game is in a climate-controlled arena, dead of winter, but it's going to be 70 degrees in the arena, right? 72 degrees, wherever room temperature is. So you're not going to be uncomfortable. Oh, by the way, you have the summers off. If you're a star, you're not playing summer league basketball. You literally have the summer off. You know, baseball players, they're playing during the summer. Sure, the wintertime, they can go vacation to whatever Caribbean island they want or, you know, Mallorca, Spain, or wherever the heck they want to go. There's plenty of places, but they are vacationing in the wintertime. A basketball player, first of all, is making more money than a baseball player. They're playing half the games. They're playing indoors in a climate-controlled atmosphere, and they have the summer off. So forget golf, forget tennis, forget soccer, forget all that. If my kid, and I don't have a son, if I had a son, and by the way, they would never be tall enough because I'm like 5'11 and my wife's like 5'5, but again, this is not reality, but seriously, I would steer my kid to play basketball. When Devin Booker is going to make $72 million a year, and I read that after this Shai Gilgeous-Alexander Supermax he signed, his next contract would be like for $100 million a year. So the money's outrageous. No question about it. The money is outrageous. But what are the expectations? What do people think when it comes to Cooper Flagg? You know, obviously one game is not something that you can base anything on. But I want to talk a little basketball, all right? The Knicks bring in Mike Brown. They fire Tom Thibodeau. Was Mike Brown really the choice? Is that a lateral step? Do they go backwards? Cooper Flagg, what are the expectations? What do we think he's going to be year one with the Dallas Mavericks? Mike Vorkunov, national NBA basketball reporter for The Athletic. He's going to join us next. We are just underway on a Friday, a nice, hot, steamy Friday. Dan Schwartzman, in for Rich Eisen. It is The Rich Eisen Show.
So, you know, we love talking movies around here. You know, we love talking comedy around here. We also love talking about classics around here. So, you know what I'm all about. That said, all of that said, you know how I must have felt when I was sitting in the movie theater like I was the other day watching the previews, and up came a preview for The Naked Gun with Liam Neeson as Frank Drebin Jr. That preview had me at hello. I loved Police Squad back in the day. I loved The Naked Gun back in the day. And here comes The Naked Gun once again with, yes, Liam Neeson as Frank Drebin Jr. Come on now. Son of the celebrated Police Squad Lieutenant Frank Drebin from the original movie. Paul Walter Hauser's in this movie also. Pamela Anderson. Guess who also makes an appearance? WWE superstar Cody Rhodes, and the producer of the movie is Seth MacFarlane, the creator of The Family Guy. Come on now. This is going to be so much fun. I'm excited to see The Naked Gun in theaters on August 1st. So, what do you do on August 1st? Of course, you're going to a theater near you, and you're seeing The Naked Gun. I might even be there.
Get in the zone, AutoZone.
Welcome to AutoZone. What are you working on today? Hey, that's the spirit. Right now, we're celebrating free with a free STP oil filter when you buy 5 quarts of oil and free Duralast brake pads when you buy 2 rotors. Like always, free battery testing, charging, and recycling at every store. Celebrate free at AutoZone, now through July 28th.
Get in the zone, AutoZone.
Restrictions apply.
Let's talk O'Reilly Auto Parts, people. They're in the business of keeping your car on the road. O'Reilly Auto Parts offers friendly, helpful service and the parts knowledge you need for all your maintenance and repairs. They've got thousands of parts and accessories in stock, either in-store or online, so you never have to worry if you're in a jam. The team at O'Reilly Auto Parts can also test your battery for free, in or out of your car. If it needs to be replaced, they'll help you find just the right battery for your vehicle. Need your windshield wipers replaced, a brake light fixed, or a quick service? Well, they'll help you find the right part or point you to the nearest local repair shop for help. I know, because it's happened to me. The professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts are your one-stop shop for all things auto do-it-yourself, and you can find what you need in-store or online. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts today or visit us at OReillyAuto.com/Eisen. That's OReillyAuto.com/Eisen.
Cooper Flagg making his NBA debut in a summer league matchup yesterday. Result doesn't matter. 5 of 21 from the field, 0 for 5 from three-point land. Wow, he struggled. Whoa. Who would ever thought an 18-year-old kid making his NBA debut would struggle a little bit? But he did. But he's human. I do think he's going to be a heck of a player. Let's talk a little bit more NBA basketball. Mike Vorkunov, national NBA business reporter at the Atlantic, at the Athletic, joining us. Mike, how much stock do you take in what we saw from Cooper Flagg yesterday?
-100%.
I agree, man. Like, it's amazing how people are like, oh, it was an uneven performance. Wow, this happened. Who cares? Let him get his, you know, his ears a little wet here in the NBA before we start judging what an 18-year-old's going to do. He's going to play some summer league. Let's see how it goes, and he's going to get into the regular season. Is the microscope on him a little too much?
Yeah, probably. But, you know, that happens with being a number one pick, right? Once you get to that level, everyone kind of just, like, starts looking at everything you do and putting so much weight and value on it. And, you know, it's probably less so than it is for even recent number one picks. Like, I remember Victor Wembanyama, like, I was there for his, you know, summer league debut, and he's not very good at all, and people were started asking questions about him, and it's like, yeah, that turned out fine. It was just summer league. It had been a long few months for him, same as it's been for Cooper, where they're spending, you know, the last few months getting detoxing from the college season, doing all their marketing stuff, and go straight to summer league.
You know, Mike, what's interesting to me is he goes to a place like L.A. or New York. The media attention is going to be through the roof, of course, right? You have a press conference. It's going to be 30, 40 reporters. He goes to Dallas, and it's like, okay, you know, they're a good basketball town, but it's still Dallas. I think of Dallas more, of course, as a football town. But he's kind of, in essence, in people's minds, replacing Luka, right? So when you think about the pressures on top of being that number one pick, he goes to a market where their beloved player gets the rug thrown out from under him, shipped off to L.A. in a very unpopular deal. What has that done in terms of how people in Dallas are going to be looking at Cooper? Is he always going to be compared to Luka?
I think maybe the way that Luka got traded, he's not going to be compared to him. I think really he's like, you know, this I think he almost gets the benefit of the doubt in the fact that I think there's so much animosity towards ownership and GM Nico Harrison over there, and that he was kind of like this life raft for them after they traded Lucas. I think it'll be probably a little bit kinder to him than maybe if he was just if the sequence of transactions that got Luka off that team and Cooper to that team happened a little bit differently, if that makes sense.
It does, you know, it does make sense. And I think you have a great explanation for how it should go for him, considering of how the deal happened and the hatred, as you mentioned, for ownership in the front office there. But, you know, I was speaking earlier about what I saw last week, which was that if Cooper Flagg is as good as advertised and he makes all the NBA teams and all-star games and all he's supposed to do, when he's 31 years old, he would have earned, I think, $931 million in NBA salaries. And while I think it's great and make as much as you can, the first thought that came to my mind, and maybe I'm just dumb and twisted, is this sustainable for the NBA? I get it's about revenue. It's about salary cap. It's about percentage of a salary cap. And I see players getting $20 million a year, and I'm like, he's a 10.4 rebound a game guy who shoots 40% from the field. But is this just going to be an upwards trend, or is there going to be a time, Mike, where the bottom's going to fall out? TV ratings aren't that great right now in the NBA. Is this sustainable? Guys making $70 million a year.
I mean, I guess it all depends on how sustainable you think the NBA is. you know, like, if you're thinking the NBA is going to fail at some point, then you're probably thinking that the player salaries are going to fail, and, you know, and drop off after a while. But at least for the next 11 years, they have $76 billion coming to them in just media rights, and the players get 51% of that. I think we see the player salary is kind of like the tip of the spear for how much money the league is making, but it means that the owners and the teams are getting the other 49% of all that revenue. So are they making too much money, I guess I would ask? You know, when they sell their teams for $6 billion and $10 billion, and then also turn, you know, a lot of them turn profits every year. So it's just, you know, the players are the faces of it, but everyone shares in that wealth.
Chat with Mike Vorkunov, national NBA business reporter for The Athletic, here on the Rich Eisen Show. Dan Schwartzman in for Rich on this Friday. But is it a good deal for the networks? You know, ESPN, NBC, everybody paying billions and billions. You mentioned the crazy amount of money in TV rights deals, what, 11 years, 70-some-odd billion dollars. Is it really a good deal for them, too? Are they just taking a loss to be able to say, ha-ha, we show the NBA?
Yeah, I don't know. I think that's a good question. I would love if somebody from NBC or Amazon or Disney was like, hey, here's our books. Here's how much money we make off all these games. I think part of it's interesting is because so few things really attract people reliably anymore, right? But we know that live sports like the NFL, like the NBA, baseball do. And so that's why they're paying for them. And especially if you're launching streaming services like Peacock and ESPN has its streaming service. And obviously Amazon is streaming too. Like, that gets people to pay for your service. And they hope that, you know, it you know, you get more stuff on Amazon Prime Day or whatever, right, while you're there. And they'll have a Black Friday game for the NBA, and you buy more stuff there. And, you know, I'm sure ESPN and NBC have their own ways of monetizing. Does it make, you know, is it going to be a loss leader for them? I don't know, truthfully. But I think if you're betting on something as basically a marketing engine for your other products, pro sports is a pretty good thing to bet on.
I guess it's like having your flagship store in New York City, knowing that you're taking a loss because the rent is so high. But if you want to be a legit brand, you have to have that Fifth Avenue or Madison Avenue address, regardless of the fact that you're losing money, if you want to be, you know, Hermes or Gucci or things like that. But I bring it up because, you know, you look at the NFL, for instance, and we know the money's ridiculous in terms of media rights deals for them. And if you did the per game amount of money, you think, with the number of commercial spots that can be sold, things like that, are they really making a profit? I think for the NBA, with the money being so ridiculous, there are more games, obviously, so it's spread out a bit more. I do wonder, are these, you know, networks making money or are they losing money? And as you said, it's just an engine or vehicle to get people to go, for Amazon, for instance, to spend more on Prime Day or buy more products. And, you know, my wife does that, and she doesn't even need the NBA to do that. So, but Mike, I want to get to the Knicks real quick, okay? I'm a Knicks fan, grew up a Knicks fan, and I think Tom Thibodeau did a nice job turning this franchise around with Leon Rose. He gets axed. The Knicks are turned down by at least three teams in terms of talking to their coaches. They bring in a Mike Brown. It seems as if they scrambled to do so. I watched the press conference. I think he's a really nice guy. You know, are the Knicks at this point just trying to save face because this has been a terrible offseason for them in terms of what's happened at the coaching position?
Well, I don't know that it's been a terrible offseason. I would argue there probably wasn't a reason to fire Tom Thibodeau. But I think Mike Brown is a good coach. I think, was he better than Tibbs? I wouldn't say that. But he's different than him, and he'll coach differently. And I think the front office will be able to get more involved, and they'll probably play more players and have more depth, as you've seen them kind of round out the rotation a little bit. And I think in the NBA now, it's really, really hard to win deep into the playoffs without depth and without a long rotation. Like, if there are any lessons to take from the Thunder and the Pacers, it's that you need to go like 10 deep in the finals, right? Like, you just need to give some guys a break and be able to play really hard for that long. And that was something Tibbs wasn't doing. He had to do that at almost like gunpoint in the Eastern Conference Finals when you brought in Landry Shamet and right off the bench and all those guys. The actual coaching search was obviously very clumsy, right? Like a scattershot, and it seemed like they were pivoting to something out of, you know, because they hadn't expected to do a coaching search, and so they were trying to go get guys that they probably knew they weren't going to get. But it landed them in a decent enough place. I think Mike Brown is a good coach. I think it's going to be really important to see who his coaching staff is, because I think – they were probably going to try to optimize that offense because it wasn't under Tom Thibodeau. And I'm curious to see what that coaching staff and that offense is going to look like next year.
Mike, it's very early. We are in the off season. Summer league has just begun, but the Houston Rockets so far have won the off season. In the 7-team trade, they land Kevin Durant. They brought in a bunch of guys. You talk about depth in the NBA, how important it is today. They've added incredible amounts of depth. Are you right now on that Rockets bandwagon?
Yes, but not for the Kevin Durant reason.
Okay.
Well, obviously he's great, but like I think Amen Thompson showed that he's an awesome player last year.
Yeah.
And Tari Eason is great defensively, and it's because everyone else around Kevin Durant, I think, is going to be really good, and so you're going to have him there, right? But he's going to have so much more help than he did in Phoenix, where we saw the limitations of just having Kevin Durant, right? You need to have a really strong lineup around them. You need to have a really strong rotation around them, right? And they have a really good coach with Ime Udoka. And they, you know, we saw that they're probably a little bit early this past season where they had the second seed, but still the offense wasn't there. They just couldn't score enough. Kevin Durant should help solve that. But I think that's kind of what makes me interested and excited about the Rockets next year, is the team that Durant is going to be bought into.
Mike, there's no question Kevin Durant is an all-time great player. The guy can score with his eyes closed. He can be lying in bed. He can shoot three-pointers. He'll hit him. I mean, he's an all-time great, prolific scorer. But this is going to be his, what, fifth team, I think, in the NBA. And superstars usually don't play for that many teams. They stick around. How do you view Kevin Durant? Is he at this point just looked upon as kind of a mercenary? He's going to go someplace, maybe helps him win. He just moves on. It's like a movie, right? I mean, does it kind of hurt his overall legacy a bit that he's now played for, you know, going to go play for what, his fifth team and potentially more? Because who knows how long he's going to stay in Houston at this point?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I mean, like, the way I think about it is that, to me, like, Kevin Durant is the archetypal modern NBA player in that he has no home, right? Like, so to speak, with a franchise. I don't know if Thunder fans claim him anymore, Warriors fans, Nets fans, like, all that. But he has a fan base. There is a huge Kevin Durant fan base. And so, like, he's one of those guys that supersedes one team or one franchise, and he has just, like, his own fans that he takes with him wherever he goes. Does that, factor into his legacy? Not for me. I mean, he's an awesome player. Like, whatever team he's doing that on, I don't know. That's, I guess, to some degree his choice. But, like, he'll go down as one of the top, 12 to 15 guys in NBA history, in my opinion. So, I don't know. That hasn't changed how I look at him.
When you think of him, though, do you think of him in that OKC jersey?
I don't know it's really hard. I guess I kind of will probably remember him as a Warrior, just because that's when he was on the best team that he was on, and probably playing his best. But I don't know if that's a minority view or not. Like, I don't know. Like, I don't know who claims him. Do the Thunder fans want to claim him as a Thunderer?
Thunder.
You laughing like that? Like, I don't know. I don't know. He just, when he retires, like, and he goes into the Hall of Fame, is he just going to wear that Players Tribune picture as his, like, his jersey? I don't really know where that's going to end up for him.
He just wears the Jerry West logo, I think, at that point, right? I mean, it's like the baseball player wears him.
The KD logo or something as his baseball hat.
You know, Mike, I look at him as a Thunder still, just because he played the majority of his career there, right? Golden State was 3 years, Brooklyn was 3 years, Phoenix is 3 years. He's kind of got this little rhythm going of playing places for 3 years. OKC was there for pretty much double that, almost triple that, So the fact is, I think if I'm going to overall look at him and what jersey would he wear into the Hall of Fame, if that's a thing, then obviously I think OKC would have to be it. But you're right. Do Thunder fans look at him as and you've created a new word on this show, congratulations, a Thunderer. I mean, frankly, probably yes at this point, although that's a great question. What would you see him as? Mike Vorkunov, National NBA Business Reporter at The Athletic. Mike, appreciate you as always, my friend. Have a great weekend.
Yeah, thank you for having me, and happy that we all created a new word on this show together.
Absolutely. I'm going to remember that one. Our pal Art Martinez is going to cut that piece out there. Art, if there's ever somebody who uses that word Thunder again, please, Vorkunov gets the royalties. Got it?
Got it.
All right, good. Cut that out. We just got to make sure. We made history on this show today. Not we. Mike did. Thunder. That's good. I like that. Is that an actual word? No, right? Thunder. I don't know. I like that. I'm going to start using that. But I don't worry, Art. I will cite Mike Forkanoff for doing
Thunderer.
For being the one to Thunderer. Create that Thunderer. Yeah, I think of Russell Westbrook as a Thunderer, right? I kind of do. Yeah, that's a good question. To me, it does hurt a legacy a little bit. I have to admit, it does. No question. Kevin Durant will go down as one of the 10 to 15 best players in the history of the NBA.
Well, do
no
you blame,
question about it.
Do you blame the player or you blame free agency? Who do you blame?
No, I blame the player. He is a guy that has orchestrated every move that he's made in his career. He has orchestrated every trade, every signing. He is the one pulling the strings. He wanted out of OKC, went to Golden State. Remember, he could have stayed in Golden State, wanted out, wanted to go to Brooklyn, right? Form a big three with Kyrie Irving and James Harden. Didn't work out. He orchestrated his way out of there to go to Phoenix. And then he wanted out of Phoenix. So now he's going to Houston.
It's not necessarily the money. It's the chemistry.
You know what? The money's there regardless, right? I mean, Kevin Durant's going to make his money regardless, wherever he goes. He's going to make $52 million or whatever it is this year for Houston. So the money's there. And when he decided he was done in Phoenix, I remember the list came out of what teams he wanted to go to. And it was like San Antonio, Houston, and I forgot the other team. Maybe he wanted to go to a team in a state with no state income tax. But he's the one pulling all these strings. And I just have this vision that when you are an all-time great player, you should not play for a large amount of teams. Like even LeBron James, right? LeBron James played for Cleveland, Miami, Cleveland, LA. So he's played for three teams. Maybe the greatest player in history played for three teams. Michael Jordan played for two teams. Tom Brady played for two teams. But, they didn't go there really in the prime of their careers. I mean, Brady obviously still won a Super Bowl, but he was an older Tom Brady. Michael Jordan went to Washington and he was like a part owner, so probably played. He wanted to put fannies in the stands to make the team a little bit more appealing. Almost cost himself his average of 30 points a game, by the way, because he played for the Wizards. And by the way, at like 30-some-odd years old and obviously not the same Michael Jordan, he could still put up 20 points a game. It's fairly impressive, don't get me wrong.
Really impressive.
Really impressive. But when you think of Michael Jordan, you think of him as a Chicago Bull, right? When you think of Tom Brady, you think of him as a New England Patriot.
Boo.
Right. Jeter played only for the Yankees. Kobe played only for the Lakers.
Kershaw.
Although he was, of course, drafted, by the Charlotte Hornets. Kershaw, only a Dodger. Right? I mean, there's something to be said about being a legend, but also being a legend that stuck to one place. The only uniform you ever wore was blank. And Kevin Durant, again, all-time great. One of the fun players to watch because he is a sniper. But Kevin Durant is a guy that has now will be donning his fifth jersey. I don't count the first year in Seattle. That's still OKC, same team. But that's a lot for a guy who's an all-time great.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help you when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations.
This episode is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. Navy Federal can help you find and finance the right vehicle with ease. And this summer, you're in the driver's seat with savings. You could get a $250 bonus when you buy your next car through Navy Federal's car buying service powered by TrueCar and finance with Navy Federal. With this tool, you can find the vehicle that's right for you as you search through inventory and compare models. And you can get an amazing rate when you finance with Navy Federal. Navy Federal strives to support all active duty veterans and their families to achieve their personal and financial goals. And this partnership with TrueCar is one of the many tools Navy Federal uses to help its members. Make your plan with Navy Federal and TrueCar today. Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. To qualify for the $250 bonus, car purchase and financing must be completed by September 2nd, 2025. Terms and conditions apply and are available at NavyFederal.org/TrueCar. Credit and collateral subject to approval. Navy Federal is insured by NCUA.
Dan Schwartzman in for Rich Eisen. It's the Rich Eisen Show, and it is a Friday. The Major League Baseball All-Star Game is almost upon us. The Hall of the Home Run Derby, we're going to get to that a bit later on as well. It's, I have such mixed feelings about it. I really do. We're going to get to that in a bit, though, because I do want to talk about it. But it's funny, you know, we've been talking about these NBA salaries, and we've been talking about how much money guys are making now at these Supermax type deals, what it means for the players. And Mike Vorkunov, national NBA business reporter at The Athletic, who joined us a little bit ago, really kind of broke it down when you talk about the TV revenue, how the salary cap is impacted, and how when you look at these types of Supermax max deals, you're talking about a percentage of the salary cap. So when Steph Curry signed a Supermax deal, that was back in 2017, 2018, he was the first player to sign one of these types of deals. His contract was $34.7 million because the salary cap was $99 million, okay? It took 5 years or so to then get above $40 million. But now when you start looking at these deals, okay, the money is incredible. Are you ready for this? So contracts that start in 2026, 2027, the first amount of money in the deal is close to $58 million. By the fourth year of that Supermax deal, it's almost $72 million. But based on the dollar amounts of the TV contracts, the revenue brought in, the share that they have, players and owners, 51% for the players, 49% for the owners. If a deal is signed in 2032-2033 season, the first year of that contract is going to be $102.6 million. The fourth year of that deal is going to be $127.2 million. I mean, that's unbelievable. Okay.
Hey, Dan.
Yeah.
And the salaries are so outrageous. There, one player is making more than the Miami Marlins, the whole team.
Yeah.
Look at the big three for the Thunder. They're each making more than the whole Miami Marlins team.
Yeah. But that, you know what though? But that tells you why baseball is so warped, how they have to have a minimum salary cap in baseball. You have teams like the A's, you have teams like the Marlins, you have teams like the Rays, the Pirates, who don't want to spend money, who cry poverty, who pocket the revenue sharing that they do and they get from the big teams like the Dodgers and the Yankees and the Red Sox and teams like that that make money and then share that revenue out, right? So they're pocketing that money. They're not putting it all back into the team the way that they should. And I look at it and I say, not wow, I can't believe how these NBA players are making more money than an entire baseball team. My response is, I can't believe a baseball team is so cheap that the entire roster makes less than one NBA player, right? I mean, that's, I think, how you have to look at it. And that's why earlier this year with Paul Skeens, the unbelievably talented pitcher for the Pittsburgh Pirates.
He's going to be a Dodger, by the way.
Or a Yankee, or a big market team, right? The fact that the Pirates still control his rights for like 4.5 years, when you throw in the years and then the arbitration years, and yet they're already talking about big market teams trying to trade for him. Because everybody and their mothers understand that there's no way the Pittsburgh Pirates are going to be able to afford, and maybe they can afford it, they just don't want to. There's no way the Pittsburgh Pirates are going to want to pay Paul Skeens the amount of money it will take to keep him in a Pirates uniform. So let's word it that way. They don't want to pay what it's going to cost to keep him.
Not they can't afford to keep him. I'm sure they can actually afford it. Now, it would impact the rest of their roster. But you know what, Art? The San Diego Padres are not a big market, right? I mean, that's a sleepy area.
Yeah.
You know, when guys sign to play for the San Diego Padres, no offense, it's as if they disappear off the planet. Like, people forget Manny Machado actually exists, but he does. He just plays in San Diego. Juan Soto kind of disappeared for a year. Well, no, he actually just played in San Diego. It's as if Yu Darvish went back to Japan to pitch, right? Oh, actually, no, he stopped in San Diego on the way. It's a place where guys go and then you forget they actually exist. But yet, you know what? That ownership there spent money. $250 million payroll.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
And that's San Diego.
As a Dodger fan, I can attest. Yes.
Exactly.
They are fierce competitors.
And they spend money. So if they can do that in San Diego, I don't think they have massive TV deals in San Diego. It's not like L.A. or New York or Boston or a place like that. You're telling me the Miami Marlins or the Pittsburgh Pirates, the Oakland A's can't spend $175, $200 million in payroll? They can't make that kind of money? If that's the case, they shouldn't be a team. Like, yeah, the owner's entitled to make some money, no question about it, but don't be a welfare case and not spend any of the money you get on your team. Rather, you're pocketing it. But these NBA contracts are utterly insane. No question about it. We're going to get, $100 million a year player is not that far off right now in the NBA. It's more than $1 million per game. Well, baseball All-Star Game is almost here. The Home Run Derby roster has been set. We're going to go over some of these names. Does anybody on that list get you excited? Is there anybody you're paying to see in the list of players that are there? Also, first half, what's happened? We'll talk to Jared Diamond, covers baseball for the Wall Street Journal. Next, hour one in the books, Dan Schwartzman in for Rich. It's the Rich Eisen Show.
Jim Rome takes on sports.
Why? Because you're not playing me.
With rapid-fire takes.
And a lot to get to, and I'm not sure you're going to like all of it. Honestly, I don't even care if you like all of it or not. I have a job to do.
Scorching debates.
On any given week, you have lots to beef about. Take advantage of it. Get up in here.
He's the spitfire of sports smack.
She's not my fault. We will get to all of that.
The Jim Rome Show podcast.
Get up in here, and we'll beef later on. What's your beef?
Follow and listen on your favorite platform.
You've been warned.